Thank you, guys. I was going to do that myself, just get an idea of who's in the audience. So thanks a lot, Laura. So looks like a good mix of software engineers, PMs, and aspiring PMs, and one sole AI engineer. So we'll probably see if we can use that one AI person as well into the presentation. So let me get started. Looks like I do have an intro slide, but this is it. My current role is as a senior product manager in Amazon's AWS division. We are based out of Palo Alto. Not many people know that there is an AWS Amazon building in Palo Alto, apart from Sunnyvale and the San Francisco campus. We focus on a lot of databases, big data, and AI is one of the newer services that Amazon's cloud division is focusing into. And this is an offshoot of Alexa. How many of you have heard of Alexa? Okay, good. So as a PM, I worked on opening up Alexa as a cloud service through Amazon Lex. And this was launched in last November in AWS reInvent. Have you heard of reInvent, which is a cloud computing, one of the largest cloud computing conferences we hold in Las Vegas? And this service essentially allows the intelligence of Alexa to be exposed through a cloud service so that any developer, any IoT developer, a mobile developer, or a chatbot developer can integrate a voice assistant into their application. So think of your mobile app, a pizza delivery app, and then you are interacting with it, not by typing through it, not by speaking to someone, but then an automated assistant that's voice activated. Think of all the Facebook chatbots, Slack chatbots, Twilio chatbots. So you can, without knowing too much about how to build it, we provide an easy interface so that anybody can club Alexa's intelligence into these kind of devices. So that's one of the products that was involved from scratch. So what is AI? What is the first image that comes to your mind when I say AI? I'm going to take a wild guess here. Is that something that comes to your mind? It could be this or maybe Skynet. How many of you have thought of Skynet? So, you're not too far. This is, since I think about 1950s or 1960s, AI has been in pop culture. There's been a lot of movies that came out about it that familiarized us with what human intelligence, if simulated by machines, what's a world that's going to look like. But as a matter of fact, AI is already around us in more humbler forms. So think of the recommendation engine that you interact with in Netflix. Think of the recommendation engines in Amazon, the product retail catalogs. We look at billions and billions of product catalogs and we know what is it that a customer is going to buy next. So all of these personalization algorithms, they're all humbler forms of AI. But then when everything else comes together, so this future, although this is very morbid, but this is far, far away. But then there are, AI is not something of that's out in the future. It's coming together of a lot of different things, and it's already here right now. How many of you've heard of Amazon Go? So in our last Seattle visit, this was another application of AI that Amazon's getting into. This is based on computer vision, essentially no lines checkout. You walk into a shopping mart and just pick things out. You walk out and the algorithms are able to figure out what you shopped, and then you can even put things back and then mix things up. It's all taken care of and you get a bill right away. So don't try shoplifting. It did feel like shoplifting, but yeah. So Amazon Echo is another example of AI. I have about two Echoes in my house, and we use it for the minute we wake up, we have a song that a melody that plays all the time. We use it for shopping. We use it for recipes. So we love it, essentially. So how many of you have Echoes or used Echoes? Glad to know it's catching up. So the voice assistant that's behind the Echo is called Amazon Alexa. And Alexa is just a wake word in the context of Echo. But then within Amazon, Alexa means essentially a culmination of NLU and ASR. What do these terms mean? NLU is natural language understanding, and ASR is automatic speech recognition. And the coming together of these two implies that human emotion, human voice, human speech patterns, right? A lot of nuanced understanding has to go into a machine for it to recognize a command. The way we talk to each other, the way different nationalities talk to each other, different languages, and the various accents that has to go into bringing this learning methodology into place, that's what Alexa's intelligence is. And NLU and ASR are the underlying technologies that constitute the AI behind this particular device. So what is AI? We've heard of various terms that are thrown around: AI, machine learning, deep learning, and sometimes they're all used interchangeably. So what I wanted to do today was demystify some of the buzzwords. And I've been asked to not go too deep into the nitty-gritties of things, but then just provide an overview, an understanding, so that you can have conversations around AI, be excited about what are the possibilities, what are some of the applications that can come together when you start applying these technologies. Does anybody want to take a shot at, say, what's the difference between AI and machine learning? We have our first volunteer. Awesome. Were you the AI engineer? We told you we're going to use you in the presentation. So I think you hit it on the dot. So it's essentially AI. Think of AI as the field of computer science that the aim of which is to simulate human intelligence. And what is human intelligence here? Essentially, the cognitive ability to understand natural language understanding, or it can be communication understanding, to process information, to recognize patterns, be it images, you know, about face recognition and voice recognition. So we're essentially taking human intelligence and trying to simulate that, provide machines with a lot of information and trying to create this intelligence artificially. Now, within this broad field of artificial intelligence, machine learning is a subdivision, and the way machine learning works is you feed a lot of training data to machines and expect the machines to make intelligent decisions going forward. So think of it as, how many of you are engineers here, or typical software programmers, right? So you write a program, and you write the logic, you know what the input's going to be, you know what the output is going to be. That's a typical computer program. Where machine learning differs is you provide a lot of data so that an ML model, in this case the program is an ML model, and that ML model is creating that function for you which will provide an output. So I can provide you two analogies here. Two analogies. Think of an example where you're learning how to play a guitar or a trombone or a trumpet. You learn the finger patterns, right? And you learn various finger patterns, and then once you've mastered it, you are exposed to playing at a different tempo, or you're exposed to playing at playing a different song, a different melody, and then you pick it up on the fly. And it all depends upon how well you've practiced those finger patterns. That's an analogy for what machine learning is. So think of think of the vast amount of data that is being produced by businesses of late. The amount of, I think a large part of AI and the advances we've made in AI is due to the fact that there is the parallel processing capacity that we've developed around big data, around large data sets. And we're able to feed that data as training data to machines. And that, to go back to our analogy, that's the finger patterns. That's the training data that we are able to provide to machines so that we can develop that intelligence. And they are able to predict faster, generate these ML models that are more and more smart. That's an analogy of what machine learning is. I have another analogy which is more closer to home. Think of kids, right? And a set of values that parents are expected to imbibe within the kids. And then as they go forward, they're expected to make good decisions based on those values. So that's another analogy of what machine learning is and the kind of models or ML models that we are trying to write so that devices like Alexa or things like Amazon Go come up into the future. So we also wanted to go into deep learning. Deep learning, as she rightly said, it's machine learning is very, it's has more of a statistical root. By that, think of a normal regression model where you have a set input and a set output. But in terms of deep learning, there are various layered nuances. So deep learning is another subset of machine learning. And within deep learning, the inspiration comes from the neural networks. So it's not just, think of a face recognition. A human brain, when it looks at a face, a layer of neurons convert that image into a set of pixels, and then that is passed on to another layer of neurons that identifies what an edge is. And that information is passed to another layer of neurons that identifies that, well, this is a face. And that information is passed to another layer of neurons that identifies that this face belongs to person X. And then another, it just goes on from there where you're able to identify that similarities between faces. So that's a layered network of algorithms that we are trying to simulate. So that's an example of deep learning. It's a subset of machine learning. It also functions on supplying a lot of training data to build models. But then the kind of relationship between these algorithms, that's the thing that differentiates deep learning from machine learning. So as you can see, it started way back in the 1950s, and then now is when we start to see a lot of these innovations coming through in the form of various AI applications. So I'm going to use some time here to talk about one specific product manager. I know there are a lot of aspiring product managers here, existing product managers. So what's it like to product manage an AI product? And what are some of the things that you can keep in mind? What are some of the buzzwords? I will go into buzzwords and trends towards the later part of my presentation. I think we've touched upon it briefly with the ML and deep learning deep dive. So I'll try to dive right into Amazon Lex. So text and speech language understanding. So this is one of the subdivisions of AI that we talked about. So NLU, we've talked about ML, DL, NLU, image recognition, speech recognition. There's various subcategories. One of the categories that I dove deep into was the NLU part of it, the natural language understanding. And that's where Alexa's core skill is. And what I, as a product manager, was responsible for was exposing Alexa's intelligence into the cloud, so that any developer can take Alexa's intelligence and plug it in into their mobile application. So think of, say you built a mobile application for ordering a pizza and a layer on top of it. You do not want to go deep into what your users might be ordering what your users might be ordering. You do not want to focus too much upon that technology. So you expose your app to an AWS service and integrate with an AWS service called Amazon Lex. And that's how you are going to, say, have a voice interface in front of your app. So touching briefly upon the conversational interfaces, the reason why we're seeing an explosion of voice-activated applications right now is, say, in the first generation, we've seen a natural evolution. So pretty much in the first generation, we saw memory registers and punch cards. And then I think around the 80s and the 90s, it was more about pointers. The mouse became more of a trackpad. And then we started chatting, and voice activation is nothing but just the next step of taking away the friction and interacting with machines as we interact with humans. And that has become possible because of the NLU technology that we're starting to see more and more. Apple Siri is an example, Amazon Echo, and with Google Home coming out. So we're seeing that a lot of applications will now start to integrate. And Amazon is in the process of democratizing this NLU skill so that now any company can pick up the NLU layer, plug it into their application. So we'll see more and more devices. Cars is a big example. Most of the cars now have voice activation enabled within their dashboard. So we'll start to see more and more devices integrate with voice activation. So one of the key challenges as a product manager, how do you think of what are the applications? So my focus was mostly on enterprise. Not many companies will focus purely on the AI and the enterprise applications. There will be a lot of consumer applications as well. So at Amazon, we have a big customer obsession mentality. So we start with the customers and identify what are some of the problems that they are facing. And then we work backwards from the customer. And then we figure out what the product is going to be. And an interesting process at Amazon is we start writing something called the press release of a product before a single line of code is written, before a single product mock is made. The reason that's done is, as a product manager, you tend to get pulled into multiple directions and thinking, or especially if you come from an engineering background or a design background, you want to produce that artifact, that line of code, which makes it more tangible. But thinking purely about the customer, in our case, the customer is a developer, right? For AWS and for cloud services, most of our consumers are developers. And we try to identify what are some of the developer challenges and then try to build products around that. And we write a press release, say, Amazon launches Amazon Lex, and Seattle, September 1st, 2020. Amazon launches Amazon Lex, which solves problem XYZ for a customer. A customer Y said customer code. So think of a typical newspaper or any announcement where you are launching a product. So we are forced to write that before nobody even knows about the vision of the product. So it's a two-pager or a six-pager document that we are required to write, so that as a product manager, you are in your mind very clear about what customer problem you are solving. And only when you've identified that there is a need, so this just not qualitative, but there's also a lot of quantitative feedback, the total addressable market, so a lot of data that goes into this document. So once we are very clear about what the customer segment is and if we are solving a problem, that's when we start to work backwards. And in this case, we found that there is a lot of challenge that developers face, especially in this segment, where a lot of technologies need to culminate in order for, say, our mobile developer who wants to put a voice interface in front of his application. So his specialty or his domain expertise is not in that area, but how is he going to integrate AI into his application? So we decouple that and expose that as a service, and that's where the Amazon Lex was born. So conversational interfaces, as I said, there's a large number of sophisticated technologies that needed to combine. And we created a service called Amazon Lex, And there are some key terms that I'm going to throw at you here, which will probably give you a window into how Amazon Alexa works. So there is a concept called intent. Have you guys heard of an intent ever in NLU? An intent. So an intent is essentially, there are various ways that you can order a pizza, right? You can ask somebody to, hey, I want a pepperoni pizza, or can I eat a pepperoni pizza? Can I have a pepperoni pizza? All of this means the same. So there are various patterns or various utterances that I may utter, which all of which should map to my intent, which is to order a pizza. So we, within each of these sentences, there are a couple of, if you break down that utterance, there are a couple of slots. So these slots, think of it as blanks within a sentence. I want a pepperoni pizza. So pepperoni is a slot, pizza is a slot. So once all these slots are fulfilled within an utterance, an intent is identified. So what you see is in Alexa in action. If you think about what you're saying to Alexa, think of all the words that you're uttering. And what Alexa is doing in the background is trying to break that sentence down into slots. And as soon as it identifies a pattern of 2 to 3 slots being filled, it identifies the intent, and then the fulfillment happens in the background. So there was an Uber app that someone wrote on Alexa. I want to go from destination A to destination B. And what Alexa is doing in the background is there has been a model that has been written where enough training data was provided to Alexa where different variations of how an Uber can be ordered has already been provided. And now the machine is expected to make intelligent decisions based on various types of new utterances that are spoken to it. Now, the utterances team itself is very huge, so you can imagine there is a lot of training data that has already gone into building something as Alexa. And what we're doing with Amazon Lex is providing that intelligence for free. Not for free exactly, it's a paper query, but then all that intelligence is exposed as skills via a cloud service. So hope that gives you some context around how natural language understanding works.
How do you know when there's been enough training data given in to the system? So when you know, or is it a continuous stream of data that you're feeding?
That's a good question. So the question was, how do you know that enough training data has gone into the system? So in terms of, is that in terms of Amazon Alexa or in terms of Lex? So it's a continuous training model. There is a lot of testing that goes into when you find the training data sufficient enough for the model to behave in a way that's close to what a human would behave, right? And in terms of Alexa, I didn't build Alexa, so I don't know how many years of data was provided to it, but it's with the advent of big data, you can expect that billions of records were provided to Alexa. So think about this. All the services that are exposed on AWS Cloud has been dog-fooded on Amazon Retail. So think of the recommendation engine on Amazon that you see, or the personalization engine. All of those work upon billions of product catalogs around the world. And once that is sufficient enough and that's been tested enough, that's exposed as an AWS web service for general consumption, right? So with Amazon Lex, it's been tested on Alexa, and now we expose it out to regular developers. And now what developers can do with this service is you provide the training data, and then you can continuously monitor and keep improving your model. And all of the code is abstracted for you. So it's a fully managed service. So as a developer, you start providing the utterances, you start writing an intent, you provide a set of utterances and map it to certain slots. And you can monitor and keep improving your model without writing a single line of code. So this product, some of the features are, you have text-to-speech. So it supports four-way, text-to-text, text-to-voice, voice-to-text, and text-to-text, voice-to-voice. So we can't support chatbots. So you can write an Amazon Lex bot and deploy it to Facebook, Slack, Twilio. So that's nothing but you are, say you're chatting, chatting within a chat window. That's also a form of NLU, but then the type is text instead of voice. Right, so you can, using this device, using this software, you can power an IoT device. One of the demos was a NASA. NASA was one of our private beta customers, so we engaged with them where they integrated Lex into a Mars rover, and the astronaut asked the rover to move 10 feet forward, and it was voice activated, and the rover moved by 10 feet. So think of the applications that this provides, and that's the benefit of opening it up on the cloud, where the applications are just immense, right? Just the other day, there was an email to Jeff Bezos about from a customer, and he was writing about, I wanted to share it, but I didn't know if that was, if I was allowed to do that, but it's essentially a customer thanking Bezos for Alexa. And this customer had a sister who was disabled and was not able to switch on the light or fan or many other regular day-to-day functions. And she got Alexa as a gift last Christmas, and she was now able to perform all those activities. And he was so ecstatic about it that he wrote to Bezos thanking him that all these dependencies were being taken care of through such innovations. So being in the field of AI can be quite gratifying if you think of all of these tremendous applications that I didn't think about it until I saw the email just 3 days ago. So that was really huge. So there are quite a few other features that this product supports. So you can go to Amazon. This is not a plug, but go to Amazon Lex, and you can find out more if you're interested. Some buzzwords. I think we touched upon quite a few buzzwords. So as we talked about machine learning already, so we talked about training data, providing machines with enough training data so that you can build a model that makes intelligent predictions going forward. How do you implement machine learning? So businesses have already been implementing a lot of machine learning of late. So think of all the business intelligence tools that we know. Who are your customers churn easily? What is the Netflix documentary or series that you're going to binge on next? What is the product that you're going to most likely buy, right? And what is the product line that you have to cut? So AI and machine learning doesn't have to be very, very fancy. You have already been seeing a lot of recommendation engines. A lot of business decisions are based upon business intelligence. So business intelligence is looking at past historical data and figuring out which product lines to cut, or which center do you invest in. And machine learning fills the gap by looking into the future and predicting what's going to happen by looking at that historical data. So BI and ML work really well hand in hand, and that's what we're seeing. So you identify what are your business challenges and provide, you identify what is the prediction that you want to make. Should I go with this customer, or should I cut a product line? So you identify the prediction, and then you provide a lot of data to your model, and then the model gives you a prediction. You apply that, and then you see if that decision is working out for you. So that's the loop that's been already employed by a lot of businesses for the past 5 years, more so. Deep learning, as I said, it's a branch of machine learning, and it's inspired by the way neurons work. And as the layers increase, and the complexity of the algorithms and the smartness of the algorithms increases. So an application of deep learning is Amazon's recognition, and we've seen this in Facebook and a lot of companies right now, where we're able to identify faces, things, emotions, a lot of whether a person is smiling, whether the eyes are open. So you can feed images, and this is exposed as a service now, again, via AWS Cloud. So you provide an image. This could be within any of your applications. You provide an image, and you will be able to detect whether the person's smiling, whether it's a male or a female, and a lot of different patterns. Natural language processing. This is another buzzword, so I think I've harped on it quite enough. Told you a little bit more, went into quite a few details about intents, how to identify. Natural language processing is also about emotions, identifying a sarcastic tone or identifying a sad tone. This has tremendous applications, and we've gotten about 7,000 requests already for customer care, for the ability to automate customer care. A lot of businesses want to explore, you know, interfacing with their customers and automating various types of customer query requests. We've already seen that with machines providing us with options. But then what if that entire layer is removed and you interact more and more with life-like chatbots? So we're seeing a lot of requests coming into Amazon for NLP, and customer care is one of the biggest areas that we're seeing. Trends. Rise of voice commands in assistants. We're seeing, as I said, automation cars. We predict that, well, with Google Home and Amazon Echo, it's going to be quite interesting to watch how the applications are going to shape up in the future. You can have your toaster that's voice activated. You can see your entire kitchen or your smart homes being activated by voice more than with the Echo Dot. We've seen lights and fans. You can wire up your entire home already as of today to be voice activated, and the applications are tremendous. So as a product manager, I think that's one area, that's one instant innovation that you can think about applying to any product line. So, well, I'll pause here and maybe take a couple of questions before I go into trends. Any interesting voice activation product that you guys have come across? Does anybody have anything to share regarding AI, some of the cool products that we missed out on?
I think there is someone's trying to schedule a call with me, and they use this so-called personal assistant. It's an AI software that they kind of doing the back and forth with the two people to schedule a meeting together.
Awesome. Yeah, personal assistants, I think that's one big area where we'll see a lot of AI automation. And any other cool AI products that you guys have come across?
Yeah, so Docket Labs just released the other month, and I thought that was quite exciting. And it seems to be quite similar to what you were talking about, democratizing basically the platforms for developers to develop, you know, Uber, flower ordering apps, and so on. So yeah, I'm quite interested on your take on that and how things are going to develop. Are you guys sharing information? Would it be useful?
Oh, which company do you have? Viv?
Yeah.
Well, I can't.
Got acquired by it, but yeah.
Well, all I can say is we have benchmarking teams that look at the competition, and we don't look closely at our competition. We look at our customers, so that's a good way to talk about it. But yeah, I think there's a lot of companies really taking things forward in leaps and bounds. And Viv is one of the companies that we are looking at. And Google's doing great, and Microsoft has been investing as well. So, yep.
So we've been talking about
We can't disclose that, unfortunately. we've seen quite a few requests. You speak of automotive. We've also seen a lot of airlines reach out for their customer care. Automotives, a couple, but quite a few. To Echo. Yeah, I read about it a lot. Awesome. That's really good to hear. It's just going to explode pretty much the number of customers. Has someone else had a hand drop?
What's been your experience with customers being like nervous about all the data that's being fed into like your cloud system? Because I feel like a lot of people would be worried about, you know, you're sending all this data or voice stuff to the cloud. Google has this application that shows their history of everything Google you've ever done. So like my friend was showing me what he said last night to his Google Home was like logged in this thing. So what do customers have any worries about these things, and how do you like ease the discomfort of that?
That's a really good question. Sorry. So his question was around data privacy. What has my experience been around customers raising concerns about what the amount of data that's going into these devices, and if we are seeing such queries increase a lot from customers, that's such concerns being voiced to us. So data privacy is one of the biggest trends that's emerging with that goes hand in hand with these advancements, right? That came up even when search was new. There's a lot of monitoring that happens with cookies on our browsers. So all advancement in technology, it goes hand in hand with how data privacy is managed for our customers. And in the case of voice activation and especially smart home and IoT devices, the amount of data that goes in to these cloud services is huge. And it's a lot of sensitive customer data. There was an example where a burglar was caught on Amazon Alexa, and that was produced as evidence in court. I'm not sure if you guys heard of that one. So that's very surprising. And one of the things that was surprising to me was every single record that a customer speaks into the Echo is available to us. As in, all those utterances are tracked in order to improve the model. And it's not just the text. So as you speak the text, it's converted, as you speak a command, it's converted into text in the background, but that voice sample is also available to us. So that blew my mind when I discovered it. But specifically to your question about customer feedback coming into us, we've not seen explicit customer feedback being very concerned. We've seen mostly positive feedback about how to be able to use it or how to empower products to use the AI, not so much about the privacy. And that's quite surprising. I was surprised that all of this information is actually stored by Amazon.
Put off question to that. How do you strike a good balance between privacy and personalization? Because obviously, if it's too anonymous, you won't be able to specifically tailor to a specific user. So, but at the same time, giving out too much or storing too much about somebody, that kind of like.
I think that's the good question. His question was, how do you balance privacy with personalization? How much data is enough? And the right answer to that is essentially presenting to that user what might be useful to him without really making it very creepy. So think of the inbox, And if you were shown ads related to all the emails, some of your really personal emails, if you were shown ads as a product manager, you have to think about your customer and identify where to draw the line. You can use some of the methodologies that product managers use is purely through A/B tests, through usability tests, through through aggregate data as well to identify where to draw the line. And one important concern of privacy is, again, to only show that particular user what he's interested in and not really go share that information anywhere else. So that, I think, is taken care of really well by most of the larger companies. So that's where I would draw the line as a product manager. Sorry, go ahead.
So is the voice available for playback for myself? Like, can I go back? Like, you had this conversation 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Play this part of it.
Yes, mostly I'm not sure on Alexa, but on Lex. Well, I'm not really. I use Alexa. I work on the Alexa app. Every single utterance. So good for the customer. So on Lex, we do that as well. So every single utterance that a customer has spoken is exposed, because you as a developer want to improve your model, and without that training data, you cannot improve your Lex model. So good to know we provide it to customers, so there's transparency there. From there.
In response to the privacy question, you're in the enterprise world, yeah? So on the enterprise side, have you dealt with highly regulated environments like government and healthcare and finance and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
The cloud seems to be a big no-no in a lot of those environments.
So, I think two really good questions. So just to rephrase both of their questions, one was around Gov Cloud and some of the highly sensitive data. How do we handle that? And his question was around various locales, various countries, and legal issues pertaining to that. Especially since this is an enterprise application on the cloud, how do we circumvent and how do we align with various constraints such as these? So the answer is twofold. One is within AWS, we have something called the Gov Cloud, and that particular data center is regulated. Access to that is controlled as well. And even every single developer, there's various privileged access levels. So we won't be able to view, say, some utterances that are very specific to maybe the Gov Cloud. So there are these checks and balances in place so that that is treated as a separate entity by itself. Well, that's different from the public cloud. And every new hire that goes into, say, the AI team, where you are in a position to get access to some sensitive information, there are certain legal procedures and certain privileged access roles that you have to explicitly get access to. So that's one way of handling it. So that goes for legal. That was the second part of it.
How do you keep your product differentiated when you actually expose the service on AWS? Like, how do you keep Alexa differentiated as a product?
That's a good question. So his question was, how do you keep Alexa differentiated and competitive when you expose that as a service on the cloud via AWS? So I think in terms of keeping Alexa as a product or as an IoT device, the only way for IoT, for the training data to get better, is to get all of this data and feed that into Alexa. So I think that's one way that Alexa wins. And secondly, adoption to Alexa also increases, right, when you open source this information and the word gets out that Alexa can be used in various ways, as opposed to this $100 device that is tightly coupled with that software. So Amazon has a history of doing this, particularly with most of their services. You build the tech and then you expose it out as an AWS service, and that model appears to have worked really well, and you've created a different revenue stream on a paper query model. So if your service ends up doing really well, for every single query that hits Alexa or the AWS service in the background, Amazon makes money as well. So that's the cloud play, pretty much. So
I was thinking about your one pager press release that you talked about, and I think you said 2020 there. In such a exciting and continuously changing field like artificial intelligence, how do you build your roadmap? How do you maintain it? And more importantly, where do you generate your ideas from? Because you're solving problems that customers may not even know that they need to solve.
That's a good question. So his question was, how do we write press releases, and how do, sometimes they are phased out well into the future. What is our process of figuring out what customers need when we think that customers don't even know what they need as of today? So to your point about 2020, that's a random date that I picked. Most of our press releases are more near into the future, mostly within the year or two. We end up breaking things down as a, usually there is a big six pager about what the field, when we started the Amazon AI division, it was a six pager about what are some of the possibilities, some of the tech that we can expose as a service in the cloud. And once that vision was set, we break that down into these minor press releases for each of the individual services. And our inspiration comes primarily from the customer. We really take, there's an Amazon philosophy called leadership principles, and customer obsession is at the top of it. So you would have seen that with the Amazon customer care as well, and that flows into the Amazon Web Services subsidiary as well. So we really obsess about what the customers are doing and every single piece of feedback that comes into Amazon. And there's always a close eye on the competition as well. You'd be lying if you don't look at that. But I think those are the two sources of inspiration, more so on the customer side than the competition. Sorry. Go ahead.
So back to the burglar. It sounds like Amazon collects all voice data through Echo. That's right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you then initialize the utterance? How does that get initialized? Is it like, hi, Echo, please do XYZ?
Right. So his question, if you guys weren't able to hear.
That's not the end of the question.
Oh, you have
one. But is that true? Is that right?
Yeah, there is a wake word, right? In this case, it is Alexa. And after that wake word, you can configure that wake word to be anything.
Okay.
And once that's activated, that's...
So then my question is, what then gets... what then becomes available to the user when they go through their list of queries and utterances? Only those that come after the wake word?
Yes.
But then every other voice that is ever uttered around an Echo is still collected by Amazon and not made available to the user.
It's not stored.
But that's not stored.
It's not stored. Only the utterances.
Yeah.
But then the burglar was still stored. How was he able to wake Echo?
I don't know too many details about that burglar episode, as the amount of information that I have is pretty much that was used as an evidence. that's a nice mystery to solve, I suppose. I imagine some words were stringed together to make the wake word Alexa.
Seems improbable, but maybe.
It's where I'm not hiding anything. I think I just had a couple of slides.
I just
want
to make sure.
Oh, no.
I'll get it.
Well, I'll take one more question before. In the back. Got it. So her question was, we use the word model a lot, and it's a black box. How can, in non-technical terms, how can you picturize what a model is and what it looks like? So let's use the computer program analogy. So you write a function that takes an input and gives you an output. A model takes in data and generates an intelligent function. So you're spot on when you talked about a regression, right? A regression model is something that builds an equation, and then you come up with that equation and you have a statistical probability of or a confidence factor on how accurate your regression model is. So this ML model is similar to that. So you provide training data, and in this case, vast amounts of training data, and you expect it to come up with a function that can mold itself based on the data, so that it can, when it's presented with foreign data, right? So there are, when like we use the trumpet example, you put the finger patterns in and you learn it so well that when you are presented with foreign data or new data, your model should be accurate. And I think the regression model is an accurate way of kind of picturizing how a model works. Does that make sense? Go ahead.
I work on statistics modeling, so I think I can deal with like a simple example. For example, if you have a use like Zillow or Latin to search for housing price, then just think the housing price as a variable you want to predict, then what can be related to the price of a house? How many bedrooms, the square feet, and the location, like the zip code. So a model is a function or equation, then you can use all those information as an input. So let's say the more bedroom, the price is higher. The more square feet, the price is higher. And the zip code, the location, that is closer to like a nicer or safer neighborhood, then the price is higher. Then you in the very beginning, you have to collect a historical data, maybe like 1,000 houses, and they are real price, and all those information called parameters, and then you can build a linear regression model. And in this model, you would say if you have one more bedroom, then the price will increase by 10%, and if you have 100 more square feet, then the price will increase by 20%, something like this. So this is kind of like a modeling. It's a very simple linear regression, and you can also have like random forest decision tree, neural network, SVM, and this list goes on and on, and you just Google predict modeling and machine learning, and it will come up with a lot of stuff.
Yep, I think that's a great example, Zillow, Redfin, predicting house prices. So I can meet after and then provide you some more resources on Udacity and a few other ML resources. So I think we have 3 minutes. I'll quickly go through a couple of trends. I think we've touched upon all of these, and that was more valuable than so any data that I can provide. But just to give you a sense of AI, some of the trends that we've seen, the number of connected devices, 6 billion. 16% of American jobs will be replaced by AI. For good or for bad, that's one of the data points that's coming up. The number of AI startups, 1196. So you're probably about data privacy. Well, 6% of adults think they're not very confident that the government agencies will keep their records private. So only 6% think that their data will not be monitored by the government. So with cloud. And between 2011 to 2015, we've seen 6x increase in the number of startups and equity deals around AI. So that's six times every year. It's just the number of AI startups that we are seeing, the number of acquisitions are increasing by a lot. And as you can see, this has become a household item right now, and I have to put Amazon product, but then I'm sure you guys are aware of autonomous cars, what Uber's doing, what Google's doing. So all of this is AI in action, and I think at the end of this, we talked about Amazon Go, and you can visit the store pretty much in Seattle. To close it out, I think we know of AI and going back to our initial slides, the Matrix and Skynet and all of that, that's artificial general intelligence where AI is as intelligent as a human, right? Right now we are in, as I said, some of the humbler forms of AI where we're seeing recommendation engines. We are seeing artificial intelligence or intelligent agents that do one thing really well, like speech recognition or NLU or, you know, maybe learning the trombone or the piano or the violin. And for that symphony of AI, for everything to come together, that artificial general intelligence, so that's the culmination of the entire effort, and we're getting there. And it's a really exciting field. I've shown you some examples where it has applications, human applications, social applications. So as a takeaway, what I would encourage is look at not just, you know, some of the devices that are out there that are branded AI, but some of the more intelligent algorithms that you see as well, recommendation engines, and look for opportunities that you can, that you think can be made better through voice. As a product manager, you can look for various opportunities to automate and introduce AI into any of your products and make it more intelligent and smart. Yep, that's all I have.
All right.